Well, Dr. Wooten, welcome to the podcast, Talk Mental Health with Logan Noon. I hope I win the award for your first med student that's ever had their own podcast.
I think you do. I've never been on one before.
Nice, nice. Well, welcome. Yeah, so I'm really excited to have this conversation with you today. You know, I really think of you as a great role model in my third year of clinical rotations. Obviously, I'm pursuing psychiatry, so I thought I would absolutely hate my surgery time, but I actually really, really enjoyed it. And it was a fun experience. I learned a lot. And thanks again for showing me a good time.
Good. That's what it's about. At least being exposed to it and seeing that it actually can be fun.
So Macy, I guess, you know, this whole conversation is about like the mental health experience of becoming a female surgeon, you know, what it's like to still be a female surgeon, if you hit like ceilings in your opinion. But, you know, from your perspective, what would you want to know about Dr. Wooten's experiences and background?
So I got to work with Dr. Wooten for the listener, and we had some of these conversations already, and it was really eye-opening for me as someone who is considering it for a career path. So some of those questions are going to be some of the ones I'll ask you again, Dr. Wooten, and maybe we can start from the beginning of like, what made you want to become a surgeon in the first place? And like, just start there.
Sure. So one, I always loved science. I loved working with my hands. I knew that I was going to at least pursue, you know, something in that area. My mom is a nurse in the OR, and so in my junior and senior years of high school, the surgeons there were more than happy to have me come in the OR. So I would get to go, not scrub in cases, but be in the OR and watch things, and just fell in love with surgery there and knew that that's probably what I wanted to do. And so then went through college, majored in microbiology, still loved being in the lab. You know, anything hands-on I could do, that's what I wanted to do. Continued to shadow surgeons while I was in college, and just went from there.
Okay, so then since we're kind of talking about, like, the female perspective or, like, roadblocks, in that particular part of your journey, were you ever met with the comments of, oh, you must not want a family, or, oh, you're too nice to be a surgeon, or, you know, things like that that I have received.
Why don't you be a nurse?
Yeah, like anything like that in that phase of the journey?
Not so much in undergrad. It was more med school when I would started to get those comments. In undergrad, it was pretty much, oh, you can do whatever you want to be. And I had a lot of support in undergrad from my advisors and teachers. But yeah, hitting med school was a whole another realm of things. First and second year, not too much. But as you start doing your clinical rotation, that's when it would get harder. People would make more comments along those lines of, well, there's never a good time to have a family, and if you commit to surgery, you're not going to be able to be that. And or if you have kids, but you're a surgeon, you can't be a good mom.
And at that time of third year medical school, you were married, correct?
Yes, yeah. So I got married young. I was married in college, so I was married at the time.
So maybe they made also those assumptions, like because you're married, you're certainly going to have a family sooner than later.
Yeah, and, you know, during the residency interviews, you get that question over and over, even though that's an illegal question. I would say, I think probably about 75% of the time, I got the question of, well, are you planning on having kids while you're in residency? So you'll get asked that, even though it's a completely illegal question, and just have an answer ready for it. But yeah, I definitely got the, you can't be a surgeon because you're not a, you talked about first words, a B. I got that several times, a bitch.
Let it rip.
Surgeon because I'm not a bitch. So, yeah, you'll hear that.
Do you feel like, or maybe you can't really speak to someone else's experience, but do you think that was unique to you being a female pursuing surgery, or do you think like a nice man would have also got that comment, or, you know, like, do you think those were unique to being a female?
I think it was more me being a female, but I do know some guys that are not as aggressive in surgery, and they got some of the same treatment.
Okay. So I guess let's continue the journey through becoming a surgeon. So you're in your third and fourth year of med school. If someone's listening and wants to pursue surgery, you could talk about your journey through third year. What did you do during fourth year? How were your interviews? And then if you faced any discrimination during that time?
Sure. Well, and if I could ask, even you talked about how the on your residency interviewers, they asked when are you planning on having kids? And I know that's an illegal question, but how did you dance around that subject while still being respectful to the people you're trying to impress?
Well, at the time I was just honest. So I had no plans of starting a family in residency, because that is 5 years of a lot of time commitment and torture in some aspects. So I had no plans of being a parent in those 5 years. And so I was just honest. I said, no, I don't want to have kids at this time. I want to focus on my training. And if you had thought about maybe having kids, I don't know how you would answer that question. That might be a little bit harder or trickier thing to dance around. You don't want to just come off and be like, I'm not answering that. That's illegal. I mean, that's not a good response either.
So. Yeah. And then are residencies up front, surgical residencies, I guess, specifically, up front about if you were to have kids during that time, here's the parental leave agreements, or because it seems like they clearly don't want you to have kids during that time, do they not really expose what the actual policy is to prospective medical students?
That I'm not sure. I know, because I never asked for it. I didn't plan on having kids at residency, although I did, and so we can talk a little bit about that. But I was the first female in my surgery residency that had kids during their clinical years. So it was a big shock to the residency director and, oh my gosh, what are we going to do with her kind of thing. So.
What advice talking through your experience in obtaining the residency, what pitfalls or roadblocks did you have, or what advice would you have in that part of just trying to get the residency, I guess, would might be helpful.
Sure. So the biggest thing you have to decide in the route of surgery residencies is, are you going to do, when you get out, do you want to be an academic surgeon? So do you want to pursue research? You want to train residents? You want to stay in bigger cities versus do you want to be a community surgeon? So you want to get your training done, get out, work at a smaller hospital and not do research. So those are your two main avenues. I knew that I had no interest in academic medicine. And so I was able to pursue some of the smaller community residencies. And I will say nowadays, I think women in surgery is a lot better. I think last year, almost 50% of the surgery slots went to women, if I remember right. So definitely they're being accepted, and it's maybe a little bit, I don't want to say easier, but it's definitely accepted more now, which helps. And I even had a fairly easy time. I didn't feel like my interviews were harsh or tough or prejudiced against me because I was a woman. So I think things are definitely turning for the better.
Cool. And then I think if your experience in residency, you said you were the first female to be pregnant, and they were like, what on earth? Would you want to talk a little bit more about
that? How dare you be fertile?
Yeah.
So what happened with me is I started out in a smaller community residency program, which hit financial problems and closed after my second year of residency. So it was kind of a scramble to go somewhere else. So I was in Pittsburgh at the time, and there were three surgery residencies. There was the University of Pittsburgh, which is obviously the big academic institution. There was the residency I was at, and then a third community residency as well. And so those two hospitals agreed to divide us three residents up. And so the University of Pittsburgh agreed to take one from each class, and then the other two went to the other hospital. And so we had to interview for those spots, and I was lucky enough to get into UPMC. But what's the big thing about that is it's a 7-year surgery program. So you're 5 years of clinical training, and then it's a required 2 years of research. Luckily, since I had no interest in academic medicine and I was not coming into this wanting to do research, they let me skip those years. So they had had pregnant females before, or pregnant surgeons before, but they were doing it during their research years, and so they had a lot of time that they could do it. So I was the first resident that was in their clinical years that got pregnant. And basically what it boiled down to is, in residency, you get 4 weeks of vacation. And if I wanted to graduate on time, there was really no maternity leave. I just saved up those 4 weeks and I used them all at one time after I had Caroline. So,
oh, wow.
Man, I worked through Christmas. I worked through New Year's Eve. I didn't get a break at all until I had her in April. And that was my 4 weeks of vacation.
And then let's say if you did want to take, you know, I guess for lack of a better term, like a more traditional maternity leave, like maybe 9 months or whatever, is there even an option for a resident to graduate with the class below them, or there is not like a spot to train them? Like, how would that work?
I think that they would make it work. They made it sound like if I wanted to take additional leave, I could, but then I would not graduate on time. So I would have to, if I was pursuing the fellowship, that was going to be delayed. They were going to have to restructure basically the whole next year to get me to graduate on with that following year on time. Yeah. But I think it's possible, but it's tough.
So I guess just so the listener understands, maybe we already said it, but you're a general surgeon. And so it's kind of fun. You do a little bit of everything from kind of the run of the mill, taking your gallbladder out or the appendix out, but also some really like wild trauma stuff. And before I started this conversation with you, I kind of looked up just some of the stats, and it was last year in 2018, like 20% of all general surgeons in active practice were females. And that was way better than other aspects of surgery outside of OBGYN. And so like the neurosurgery, the plastic surgery, you know, they were all between like 8% to 10% or so. So what additional layers of maybe discrimination or just like work-life balance make those different specialties potentially harder for a woman?
I think it's probably the additional training. So general surgery in itself is 5 years. So that's a long time to commit to, you know, you've got your 4 years of med school and 5 years of training. So that's a long time to put a family off, especially for, you know, maybe an older resident or something like that. And then when you add on those additional, your neurosurgery, your plastic surgery, vascular surgery, all of those are additional years after that 5 years. And so I think a lot of women maybe aren't ready to commit to that. You know, they're ready to start having their family and not pursue, you know, longer training.
And well, I guess so I guess the end goal is always like getting more females in those kind of, you know, highly specialized areas of medicine and really any career path. But so how could a residency become more friendly and accommodating to females to be able to practice whatever aspect of medicine interests them the most?
I think that's hard because right now they're facing restricted hours. So now it's 80 hours a work week is what you can work. That started my fourth year of residency. So my first 3 years, we were not under any kind of restrictions and we worked easily over 100, 120 hours a week.
Wow.
So now they're already facing, now you can only work 80 hours and they're trying to figure out how to get all that training still within 5 years rather than extending it out to maybe a sixth year to get all the training you need. And so it's already very time limited in a sense to get your training done within that 5 years. Now, if I think they were willing to extend that longer, then they would be able to do their regular, you know, they could do a longer maternity leave knowing that they're going to tack on another year now for their training. Something along those lines would probably work.
And Dr. Wu, didn't you say, like, even if, you know, you said you saved up your 4 weeks and you planned on being gone for that short time for your maternity leave, that's still, at this time, is still hard on the other residents, right? Because they all have to make up, like, and be there taking care of, like, the shifts you would have been there. So even if you could extend maternity leave, that just, it's taxing on everybody else. So that maybe is another problem that they'd have to work out.
Right. Yeah. So when you're gone, that spot that they depended on you to take call and to be, since I was in my chief year, I was the chief resident on my services. So now my interns and my second and third years don't have a chief resident to go to run stuff by. So they have to readjust everybody else's schedule to, you know, to make up for me being gone. And so, yeah, that is tough if you wanted to extend it. And then that lays on that whole layer of guilt that women like to feel. So, you know, then I, of course I felt guilty that I, you know, I felt like I was putting more work on my colleague. Yeah. I even felt guilty because I had to be induced because I was preeclamptic, and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, they're not going to be able to cover. I was on that weekend and I felt guilty to put that on them. When in actuality, I should be worried about taking care of myself and my baby, but yeah. That's what we do as women.
That's crazy. Did you guys happen to read that article? It was about an orthopedic surgeon resident, a female resident, and she was excluded from certain surgeries because she was a female and they felt that she wasn't strong enough or couldn't handle certain maneuvers. Do you know the article I'm talking about?
I didn't read it, no.
Okay. Okay, well, I'll put it in the post with this Instagram piece, but that was kind of the gist of this article, is how this orthopedic surgeon, a resident, you know, felt that her teachers weren't picking her because maybe there was heavier lifts in orthopedic procedures. I don't really know because I haven't had an opportunity to scrub in on any of those cases, but it kind of had me thinking, because actually in one case I remember I did with you, Dr. Wooten, it was an exploratory laparotomy. And so for the listeners, it's actually one of the more fun ones we do, or at least I saw during my time there. There's like a big cut. It's made sort of right down the middle, and you open up and kind of see what's wrong, what's going on, and what we can fix. And I remember in the midst of that procedure, I was holding kind of the intestines to one side to give you better access to, I forget what you were going after, you know, typical psychiatrist. But I remember it being very tiring. Like I was like sweating, my wrists and my forearms were getting cramps. And like I had to take breaks with, you know, the scrub tech and you to kind of, to hold everything back, to create space. So I guess what I'm getting at here is there any merit to that argument, and how can we overcome any of the, difficult maneuvers, or do I not really know what I'm talking about here? I'm just such a noob when it comes to surgery.
I don't think it really applies for anything in general surgery. There's nothing that you just have to have brute force for in general surgery. It's actually a lot more fine motor, knowing what you can cut and what you can't cut within, you know, millimeters of each other. Orthopedics is a whole different thing. But I will say, when I was at the University of Pittsburgh doing my training, we were level one trauma center. And I remember several of the women orthopedic residents coming in and reducing dislocated shoulders and hips. And I mean, they would get on that table and pull the hip all the way back in place. And so I don't think that would be a valid argument. I think that a woman can do whatever they needed to do, even in orthopedics or something that deals with heavier joints and bigger instruments.
Okay. And that's good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. While we're talking about like articles and examples, I recently read one that said there was a female, she was like a third year resident in general surgery, and she had a male med student with her in the OR, and the attending was like, here, let's let our future colleague finish this up, and handed the male med student like the scalpel rather than like the actual resident who is a female. Have you ever like had that experience with a male med student, or like been called a nurse, or like just something like along those lines?
So not with my attendings. So again, our program was really supportive of women in the law, other than not knowing what to do with me when I got pregnant on my clinical rotation. But otherwise, they were very supportive. The attendings were definitely treated that way by nurses, by patients. I rounded on a patient for a week straight, and then one day I walk in and they're on the phone and, oh, I'm gonna let you go, my nurse just walked in. And I do remember a few instances, again with nurses and patients, that they would direct all their questions and everything to the male med student rather than me, who was, you know, the doctor for that patient. Well, that does still happen, and I think sometimes it's not necessarily just outright sexism. It's just that's what they're used to, right? Especially the older patients. And so they talk to the male in the room because that's the one that must be in charge.
Have you ever had it be so severe where a patient, you know, would prefer one of your male colleagues to perform the procedure instead of you?
I actually haven't. I've had multiple patients that are, when they meet me and they're, oh, you're a woman. I didn't know that. Or, but in the long run, I've never had anybody just, you know, flat out refuse to use me because I was a woman. I mean, I don't do colonoscopies very often now, but I used to at my old practice. And so occasionally I would have guys that would want to go to my male partner. But on the exact opposite, I got most of the women in town because I was the only woman surgeon doing the colonoscopies. And so kind of worked out both ways.
Okay. Well, so I guess let's imagine Macy 5 years ago. You know, she's right at the start of pursuing medical school, maybe thinking about surgery in particular, but nervous because, you know, she's married to Kendall. He's awesome. Thinking about kids and whatever. So what would you say to that pre-med student who's considering a career path like yours?
The main thing is just make sure that that's what you want to do, because it is a very long time commitment. It's very busy as a resident, but that is temporary in that it's 5 years, but that's a temporary strain. But even as an attending, it's very time consuming, very tough on a marriage, very tough to be a parent. And so one, you got to make sure you have an understanding partner. And then two, just make sure that's what you want to do, because if you get into it and you don't like it, you're going to be miserable. It's not a fun lifestyle sometimes. But as long as you love what you do, I mean, I love getting up and going to work every day. I love what I do. Then it's worth it and it's possible.
Well, hell yeah. Well, Macy, do you have any other questions you'd like to ask?
I did have one other question. I saw this, funny meme. I actually almost texted it to Dr. Woon, but I'm just going to tell you it now. So I saw this thing and it said, men tend to choose high paying professions like doctor, engineer, CEO, while women naturally go towards lower paying careers like female doctor, female engineer, female CEO. And I thought it was so funny, but I wondered if you ever have noticed that part as being like a female surgeon. Like, have you ever noticed you've been paid less than your colleagues that are male?
I have not. So the two jobs I've had, I've been employed by a hospital system, and it's a pretty generic contract, and everybody that's a general surgeon gets the same contract, the same pay. But I am also on Facebook, part of a what's called Surgeons Moms group, and so a lot of women have posted that, you know, oh, I'm going in to talk about pay raise or negotiations with my contract, and I found out I'm making such and such less than my male partner. And so it's still out there. It does exist. So definitely know your worth. Do your research when you get out of residency and you want to pursue a job. Do your research. Find out what the average pay is, and don't sell yourself short.
I've heard that. I went to this like women in medicine dinner, I think as a first year. And that was something a lot of the physicians in the room were saying, is like, men almost naturally tend to vouch for themselves or advocate for themselves like financially more than women do. And they wanted to like start a thing like to teach like women how to advocate for yourself, like contractually, and like just knowing what you're doing when you get out. And that's kind of stuck with me. So when I saw that, I wondered if that's still a reality.
Yeah, it does still exist. And I think a lot of it is, and again, I got this off of that Surgeon's Moms group, listening to all these different conversations. But women in general, they have this kind of imposter syndrome. So, right? So you go through surgery and you go through residency and training and even in med school, and you always think, well, I'm not quite as good as the next person, or I'm not as good as them. And so you're always comparing yourself, and you always feel like maybe I'm not quite as good as the next person. So maybe I don't deserve that much money, or maybe I don't deserve that much vacation time. But in actuality, I mean, we do the exact same training as the male colleagues, right? We're there, we put in the hours, we put in the work, the sweat, the tears. So you're definitely worth everything.
Well, and then Logan, do we have time? I was thinking it might be nice to end on like a higher note, kind of like what advantages do you think that women have being in medicine or as a surgeon specifically? Like, have you noticed anything that just in your own life or what you've read?
So advantages, I think women in general can connect with patients a little better sometimes, especially in the field of surgery. Where you seem to be a little bit more compassionate, more empathy. And that's not to say guys don't either. I've had several male colleagues that are just as good at it, but I think women are great at that. I think that they can relate and kind of form better relationships sometimes. Another advantage, really, because there aren't as many women in surgery, kind of what I alluded to with colonoscopies, but it also goes for my breast cancer patients and things like that. Women tend to gravitate towards me. They want a woman surgeon taking care of them because we've got the same parts. We've got the same organs. I know what to expect. I know what they've been through. And so that can be advantageous for you.
Yeah, I think that totally makes sense. And it kind of reminds me, actually, of one of the cases we have together, and if I break any HIPAA, tell me and I'll cut it out of the public post. But, I remember we were consulting on this patient and we were considering a total mastectomy. And for the listeners, that's, removal of all of entire breast tissue so that, you don't have to face cancer. And there's, of course, cosmetic things they can do afterwards to make the breasts look normal. But so we were considering it for this one woman. And, me, because I don't have breasts, really, I'm a little overweight, so little ones, but I don't have them. I was just thinking, like, do the mastectomy. Like, why wouldn't you do the mastectomy? It makes total sense. Avoid total cancer risk. Like, it just was a no-brainer to me. And then I remember you conversing with the patient, just your ability to empathize with that patient because, you're a female. You guys were able to connect on a better level than I really could in the room. And just understand like why it was such a difficult decision to her. And I wasn't able to do that simply as a man, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that that's, again, where some of the advantages come in. So far I've never had trouble getting my patient list built up, even at coming into Yakima as a new job, a new surgeon a year and a half ago, I have several patients calling, requesting me personally, and that's good. It makes me feel like maybe I'm making a difference. Then in a lot of that is usually women. So.
Well, cool. And I think just the listeners should all know that Dr. Woon is just beloved by all of the students at our school. The minute I mention Dr. Woon, everyone's like, oh my goodness, I love her. I loved working with her. She's just so, you've been a role model for a lot of us, and we really appreciate getting to work with you, and we're glad you came to Yakima.
Well, good. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I really enjoyed, and I'll forever remember blasting 90s R&B while we're doing cholecystectomies. That was just... I never thought I would have so much fun in an OR, and I really, it was awesome. So thanks again.
Yeah, well, I never wanted to do academic medicine and do the research, and I didn't want to train residents, but I love teaching students. I love having you guys, and I hope that all this crap is over with soon so we can all get back together to normal life.
Yes.
This has been crazy.
BetMGM welcomes you with a special offer on the NBA. Simply place a $10 moneyline wager on today's game. If either team hits a three-pointer, you'll win $200 in free bets, regardless of your wager's outcome. Just use bonus code CHAMPION200 when you make your bet. BetMGM is proud to be an authorized gaming partner of the NBA, and there's endless ways to make it rain with the king of sportsbooks. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com and use bonus code CHAMPION200 to win $200 $500 in free bets if a three-pointer is made in today's game. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Washington, D.C. and Virginia only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
Now through February 16th, join a clean and spacious Planet Fitness for zero enrollment and only $10 a month. With tons of equipment and free fitness training, it's the perfect place for everybody to work out.
Even me, Mr. I can't sleep at night, so I keep dozing off during the day.
Especially you, Snoozy. You'll rest easier and feel fit-tacular.
Wait, how did you get in here?
Join In Club or at planetfitness.com. Zero enrollment, $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Hurry, deal ends February 16th. See Club for details.